You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Are you looking for a unique gift for a recent grad? Or maybe you're searching for the perfect summer outfit that will set you apart from the crowd but can't seem to find your way past the Banana Republic. Even though every avenue in the city is lined with shops, it's sometimes hard to know where to shop. Patricia Marks browses through stores from big boxes to the mom and pops for the New Yorker's on and off the avenue column, offering entertaining advice about where to buy everything from handmade hats to whimsical Japanese hair combs. She's a staff writer for The New Yorker, is the author of several books, including the novel Him, Her, Him Again, The End of Him, published by Scribner. I'm very pleased to welcome Patricia Marks back to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
Weren't you also once a writer for Saturday Night Live?
I was. My very, very first job.
So how did you end up writing about shopping? Is there some kind of a link?
I was a comedy writer, and when you're a comedy writer, you know nothing, so you're limited where you can go. I like stuff. I look at stuff. I think that the New Yorker took a chance on giving me a chance, a stab at the column, and it worked.
Well, they liked the way you wrote, obviously.
They liked the way I wrote, and I knew nothing, so I wasn't going to go and cover Afghanistan, and it worked. I wasn't a shopper really as a kid. I like every little girl in my generation hated clothes. It was a jip, and nobody was ever taking me shopping for toys, which is what I wanted to do.
Mm. Well, has writing about shopping changed the way you shop?
You don't really. I'm shopping all the time, and I never needed anything. I really need nothing now. One of the dangers of writing the column is that you end up spending more than you're making on it. And depending on the topic, you end up with a category of clothes you didn't necessarily want. I did back-to-school shopping, and I looked like a 17-year-old for a while.
Well, the problem for me in reading is that I can never just read for pleasure anymore. I'm always reading with the thought, well, what's the next question I'm going to formulate?
Absolutely. When I was on Saturday Night Live, you read the paper, and it was such a relief not to read the paper this way and think, yeah, I'm not going to read it really about that. It's not so funny. How am I, torture? I can't really. It's in bad taste. And we already did a cold opening about this, and suddenly you can read whatever you want to read when you don't do it for a job.
Don't you come from a family of store owners?
Oh, yes, I do.
Did you ever work in the store?
Hardly. I had a father who sold office supplies, which was the very best profession a father could have. So I had gold stars. I think my mother once said to me, "Do you ever use a pencil twice?" My father gave me a job once, and I was a dismal failure. For 100% of the profit, I could go and sell calculators. But I noticed while I was walking to his office that Reading Terminal Market in Philadelphia was selling them cheaper than I was offering them for, and I pointed this out to everybody, so I sold nothing.
Well, I wonder whether those experiences affect the way
I'm a better buyer.
Because when you've been on the other side, you do understand certain things. I think, for example, people who've been waiters or cab drivers always tip better than everybody else.
I once did a magazine piece for a travel magazine where I was a maid at the St. Regis.
Mm-hmm. And was that fun?
Well, I didn't do much. It was fascinating to see how good they are and how bad a housekeeper I am.
How do you approach writing your New Yorker shopping articles? Do you have certain techniques?
I do. The first thing I do is what I do with any writing assignment, try to figure out how I can get out of it. Why? Maybe I can switch to another topic. Then I resign myself to that, and I waste a lot of time on the internet because it's not really wasting time. And then, especially if I'm going to a place like Chicago or Shanghai, I email everyone I know to find people they know in that place. And it's amazing how many people you can find to take care of you. And then when I finally set foot in the stores, and I always over-research it because I don't know how to do otherwise, there's sort of an art to figuring out when you're going to reveal your identity.
But you do reveal it at a certain
point. I always, always identify myself, unless I'm not going to write about it, and then I just walk out. But at first, you do a lot of just browsing. And you have to size up the stores. The bigger, more corporate stores get very nervous if you say you're writing about them. So it's all your opportunities are all over if you go into a department store and say you're writing about it, because they completely try to fob you off on the PR, or they tell you. There was a store I recently wrote about, and the minute I said I was writing about it for The New Yorker, they wouldn't even give me prices. But the littler stores are wonderful that way. I recently did Brooklyn, and everybody just talks and talks and tells you everything. I also, for someone who writes as much about shopping, I am pretty ignorant about fashion. So I have a technique for pretending I know more than I do. And I'll say, could you help? Is this? You have to act as if you're pretty sure it's made of linen, even though it might be woven from dental floss. You go, this is linen, right? And they go, no, that's something else.
And maybe they see you as a naive and...
Works for me. Parlaying my stupidity into journalism has always been a technique I've used.
Did they ever throw you out? I had a friend who went into a Whole Foods store with Alice Waters, and Alice Waters was pointing out all the stuff that had been flown in from Chile and elsewhere. The manager came running over and said, you can't do this. Get out of here.
I was thrown out of a store for taking notes.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly, my editor would like me to be taking pictures of prices, and that's just too hard for me, but I try it sometimes. They get nervous with cameras. Some people don't get nervous with anything.
Well, you mentioned that you did an article in March about shopping in Brooklyn. Do you just wander around and see what you find, or do you go with specific destinations in mind?
Brooklyn was a place where I knew a lot of people, and I had been going to Brooklyn for years, visiting them, not knowing exactly where I was except which subway to take. I figured it out geographically, and though I felt as if I'd walked around the country, did a tiny sliver. Brooklyn I also did in the freezing cold weather, which I didn't like, but wish I did.
Is Brooklyn a good place to shop? Because the great shopping neighborhoods change.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when it was Orchard Street in Manhattan, and that just seems to have gone in total decline.
Brooklyn's a great place to shop because they don't really have the big box stores. There's, I think, on Atlantic Avenue, there's talk about a Barney's, and someone said they're up in faux arms about that. But there's a lot of the real estate is relatively low, so people can pursue their dreams. I met a lot of people who came from the corporate world and said, I always wanted to open a store, and now I have a kid, so I can live above the store. And there was a lot of talk about in Brooklyn about stores that were curated, meaning they got whatever they liked and they sold it. They just, their overhead wasn't so steep, so they could, so there's more interesting stuff.
People can indulge their own special interests. So you find those wine shops where all the wines are very expensive, but they're from obscure places because the owner always wanted to go visit those vineyards in the south of France.
Right. There's a lot of that stuff in Brooklyn, or people, there used to be a store on the Upper West Side where they sold something like cheese and antiques. They don't have that kind of thing in New York now, but they do in Brooklyn. Oddball places. There is a place on Court Street called Ruby Moriarty that she handmade clothes, but she also did art installations. She had people dressed up as human statues serving fruit pancakes, and she rigged to the ceiling of her store and had a trapeze act. That just wouldn't happen at Bed Bath & Beyond.
In fact, what we're seeing more and more in Manhattan is places that look like any mall in America. The Gap, Banana Republic, Bed Bath & Beyond, Coach, the Body Shop, all those chain stores. And in the past, New York resisted that. What do you think that says about change of the city?
Well, it's going to just be, the homogenization is going to make it, lose a lot of the character.
Is it because rents are so high in Manhattan and people can't open
up these independent
stores?
I live right off of Madison Avenue, and my block still has a lot of little stores, but the block south of my block, the rent was raised 3 times ridiculously, and everybody moved out except the J. Crew moved in. I don't know. I mean, it will take, a long time to squeeze out all the little places because there are always places to go.
My guest is Patricia Marks, who writes the On and Off the Avenue column for The New Yorker, and who has been writing about shopping around the city and around the world. We'll get to some of the other places that she's been to. We are asking our listeners on Facebook to tell us what their favorite places to shop in New York are. Rebecca Cheek says that she loves Park Slope because of the number of independently owned boutiques, the same sort of thing that you found in Carroll Gardens and in Borum Hill and in Cobble Hill. I don't know whether you found the same thing in Greenpoint, some of the other places you went in Brooklyn.
Greenpoint, there were some great places, a couple. It's just starting to happen there, I thought.
It used to be Soho, and now Soho has become something different again. Is it when a neighborhood becomes really popular, does that mean that all the death to these kinds of places that you find interesting?
There are still a few, but they're not as quirky.
Mm-hmm.
And they're higher end, for sure.
There's also Nolita that suddenly you started seeing all these little boutiques
in the East End, and but as soon as I hear about it, I guess it's over.
By the way, we also invite your calls if you have something really great to say. Our number here is 212-433-9692. Is it becoming harder to find independent stores in Manhattan, do you think?
There are always a few opening up. And I like some of the big stores. I mean,
would you go to IKEA?
I would go to IKEA if I could figure out how to get... No, you can get there on a ferry. One of the problems of New York shopping is that or maybe it's a blessing, is that you can only buy so much because you live in an apartment. So IKEA, I'm about at my limit, unless I want to start hanging things from the ceiling. There is a point living in an apartment where everything looks like pre-carton, putting it in a...
But are you looking at the kinds of places like IKEA where the IKEA store in Brooklyn is the same as the IKEA store in New Jersey?
Absolutely. I didn't
and
even
Walmart
go to
Walmart would be the same. Would you ever shop at a Walmart?
I would shop at a Walmart if I wanted Walmart type of thing. Sure. I like department stores. There's not really a need in New York, and it's hard because I don't have a car. I went recently with a friend of mine to Costco for the first time, and it was as if we'd been to a foreign country. Everything looked so great, and we got, bottles of olive oil that we could have, swam in, and pieces of luggage, and got to the checkout counter, and then said, "Oh, could you put this in a bag, please?" And they said, "No, you're good to go," and didn't realize they don't even have bags. So
you have to go forage for boxes.
You have to go buy a car.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
You also go to flea markets. There are a lot of flea markets around town.
There are a lot of flea markets, and they're the place that I was just rereading my pieces. I went to Shanghai a couple years ago, and that's just one big capitalist market. I mean, if it was. There is a cricket market. There's the best market I've ever been to, which is the eyeglass market in Shanghai, where you can get great frames, not designer frames, but they look just as good with your prescription for about $20.
Isn't there also a shop where parents go to find potential mates for their children?
No, not exactly a shop, unless you call it park
a
shop. In the city parks on the weekends, parents come and they post basically resumes of their children, and sometimes they put a picture, they pin them up on trees, and they put little pieces of cardboard on rest them against the curb, and the parents go and just shop for for daughter and son-in-laws. And things like woman hunting for man who is 134 centimeters, has apartment.
So it's a certain ideal height and, of course, has his own apartment.
Education, everything, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Two callers have pointed out that the cheese and antique store is still on the Upper West Side.
Good.
It just moved to Columbus Avenue near 71st Street.
Good. So we go back to the Upper West Side.
We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll talk about more about Shanghai and other places to shop, and we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. My guest is Patricia Marks, who is the writer of the On and Off the Avenue column in The New Yorker. And also is the author of the novel that brought her here some years ago,
mm-hmm.
Him, Her, Him Again, and The End of Him, which is published by Scribner. We'll continue after this. Back with Patricia Marks, the writer of the On and Off the Avenue column for The New Yorker. We've been talking about shopping in Brooklyn. We'll get to more about Shanghai, but you've also written about shopping in Chicago, Dallas. Did you go there on assignment to look for interesting places to shop?
I only go places on assignment. Yes, I was sent to Texas. I compared Dallas and Houston, which was a fabulous place to write about shopping because that's what they do.
In Dallas?
In Dallas, yeah, they... all they do is take off their clothes and put on different clothes for the different benefit, and they wear heels. If you can walk in the heels, they're not high enough. I overheard someone in a restaurant say, "We want a table for five, and we don't want to walk there." In Dallas,
so prefer to sit at the door.
Yeah,
no.
In Dallas, I went to a party given in someone's closet that had two chandeliers, a sofa, a coffee table. And this was their main closet, not their only closet. They had a closet for black boots. They had a closet for T-shirts. They had a closet for workout clothes.
It's the sort of thing that Sex and the City has kind of fantasized in New York, but you don't can't find any places
this
where you can put those closets.
So much more than Sex and the City. This was a woman told me about. There was room. They were supposed to be a hurricane in Dallas, so she and her husband chartered a plane, went to Austin to shop, bought so many things in 4 days that they had to get a bigger plane to come back.
You also shopped in Chicago, which has that that magnificent mile.
Oh, Chicago. I loved Chicago. Chicago was the antithesis of Dallas. It was, people would say, "You in Chicago, you wouldn't say, I love that coat, but I can't wear it. I'll get it anyway." In Dallas, you might say, "I'll get it because of that." They had very wearable clothes. I like Chicago a lot. And they're very loyal in Chicago to their salespeople. They're still in mourning for Marshall Fields. Marshall Fields got bought by Macy's several years ago, and they still talk about it, and they're still very upset about it there.
Well, one of the other stores is one of the great architectural landmarks of Chicago. What is it called? Something Peary? Anyway, you went to the Oprah store.
The Oprah store.
What was that like?
The
what
Oprah
they
store
sell?
Is very nice. They sell a lot of stuff from some school that she's supporting in Africa. Lots of nice craft stuff. But they also have a little nook in the store called, I think, Oprah's Closet. And you can buy clothes in all of Oprah's various sizes. And she tells you, I think she tells you what she weighed then, or maybe not, maybe not. They're pretty good clothes, too.
So had you ever been to a store that sells celebrity hand-me-downs before?
No, but in Shanghai, I went to one of many knockoff stores, and a pretty wonderful knockoff pocketbook stores where they kept telling me how many pocketbooks Celine Dion bought there. In Shanghai, someone said, there's so many unbelievable copies, they said. In L.A., people have real Birkin bags and fake boobs, and in Shanghai, it's the opposite.
Well, you all those knockoffs and counterfeit goods must be a problem when you're trying to come back to the country, into the United States.
They let you, I think, if I remember this correctly, they let you take one counterfeit good back in your suitcase so that you can't open up a business. Where it was really tricky was the famous New Yorker fact checkers had a little problem calling the Shanghai stores, who not only said that they didn't have that item, they said they weren't stores and there was no such address.
So. What are the prices like there?
You understand markup when you go to China, what markup is, that you can just, everything I own is practically from China, and I spent about $10. It's insanely cheap.
You don't bargain.
Not very good at bargaining. I always want to go bargain up.
Are they open about the fact that they're selling counterfeit knockoff items?
No.
I mean, are they trying to convince you that these really are?
No, but they're secret. The pocketbook store I was telling you about, which I think is not there anymore, they had police, security guards outside guarding, and you could go by invitation only.
You met up with two rabbis in China.
Right. I did another story, not exactly shopping related, but it was awfully wild and exciting. I went, tagged along with two different rabbis who were kosher inspectors, and we went to some factories inspecting kosher goods, which was, we had a translator at each time. We went, one of the rabbis told me before we went to a canned fruit factory that they would be suspicious of me if I admitted to being a journalist. So I was to pose as a buyer, and I was really nervous about it and then kind of got into it. So through a translator, I was asked what kind of products I have. And I thought, well, I don't want to be too far away from canned fruit, but I don't want to be canned fruit unless there's some canned fruit questions I don't know. So I said canned vegetables. And then they asked me what I'd liked. I was interested in at their factory, and I said, fruit cocktail, just because I liked the way that the translator said it. He said, fruit cocktail. And so we went through the factory, and they would kept looking at me expectantly if I liked the fruit cocktail or not. And then we went back, and the boss wanted to have dinner with me, but I had a plane to catch, so we couldn't do that, and they were a little disappointed about that.
Meanwhile, the rabbis are off-certified.
No, the rabbis are, he's kind of trying to help me out. When they ask me hard questions, he would sort of fill in for me. But I don't know how much really, there's so much translation. I don't know what was said, because I'd said something like, I'm from New York, and then the translator said, the boss says Broadway. And then at the very end, they looked at me and they said, the boss would like to do business with you. And I was trying to think of something business-like to say. So I said, well, I'm going to go back to New York. I'm going to look over the books, and I'll be in touch. And I thought, that is the most insulting thing to say to somebody, but who knows how it got translated.
When people go shopping, is it the best policy to go during sales? A lot of people wait. They kind of play chicken with the stores before holidays, for example.
Well, I have a lot of opinions about sales. I think they're dangerous. I once did a piece for the New York Times where I invited some friends over and told them to bring their worst shopping mistake, and then we would swap them. It didn't quite work out, because what was somebody's mistake was not really coveted by anybody else. But by and large, everybody bought something they didn't want because it was cheap. So I have kind of a rule that I never follow, which is first figure out if you want something, then figure out if you can afford it, because otherwise you end up, and it sort of applies to other things besides shopping, with just stuff you could get but you didn't want. And I think it's interesting being in the stores all the time, because you see different things. And a year or two ago, when the economy was officially so bad, now it's just, I guess, unofficially bad, it was a funeral in the stores, and the Saks Fifth Avenue started it by slashing things so that they were paying you to buy. But the expectation was that prices would get lower and lower. So you'd walk through a store and you were the only person in the store. looking at goods thinking, I'm a sucker if I buy this because tomorrow it will
gonna
be cheaper.
Let's take some calls. We have Angela from Middle Village, Queens on the line. Hi, Angela.
Hi, Leonard. I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm calling to say that I've always sought out handmade goods. And in the interest of full disclosure, I am part of the Etsy team these days, recently, though, in the last year. But I wanted to recommend a website that would list a lot of the markets that Etsy, the people from Etsy, participate in around the city. It's called The New New, spelled thenewnewny.com. And they have a presence at the Brooklyn Flea. They have a presence at Hester Street Market downtown in Manhattan. Also the Brooklyn Indie Market. And it's all handmade, beautiful, handcrafted items.
Well, this is something that we're seeing more of in the city, aren't we? There was a time when pretty much only the wealthiest of the wealthy had handcrafted stuff available to them.
And before that, that's all there was. Yeah, I love Etsy. And I hate to keep talking about Brooklyn, but there's a lot of handmade stuff there, yeah.
Somebody reminds me, when you're talking off the top of your head, you can't always come up with the full name. It was the store I was trying to remember in Chicago was Carson Peary Scott. It's a department store, and it was designed by Louis Sullivan, one of the greatest architects of all time.
Is it still around?
Yeah.
Okay, I missed that.
Well, it's off the beaten track.
Okay.
We go now to Bonnie from Westchester. Hi, Bonnie. You're on the air.
Thank you. I love the small, independent, quirky stores in the outer boroughs, but the best place to browse that's a corporate is currently regrettably closing, and that's Takashimaya on Fifth Avenue.
They have
such an independent aesthetic.
Did it close already? Somebody just told me, sadly, that they missed the sale, so I figured it was all over now.
It may be all over. Yeah, I was there a couple of weeks ago, but it was just a architecturally beautiful, and they really bought, with a very independent mind and aesthetic that really fit New York, I thought.
Mostly imported from Japan.
I think so.
Right.
Well, of course, New York and Japan, I don't know what to say.
I'd love to go shopping in Tokyo.
I'll bet you that would be very exciting. Mm-hmm. Can you talk the New Yorker into sending you?
I'll try. I have a lot of places I want them to send me.
We go now to Jeff from Hell's Kitchen. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
How are you?
Okay.
I was going to mention it's difficult to find independent food stores, but under the bus overpass across 9th Avenue near where we live at 42nd Street and below, there's a series of rather wonderful food stores. And the tragedy is that the grocery store, which is called Big Apple, is going to close, and they're going to tear down that whole corner as soon as the market gets back. But it's a great place to shop for cheese and fish, and the other stores along there going south are just wonderful. It's really hard to find an independent food grocery store.
This is a problem that I've seen all throughout the city. There were wonderful shops, cheese shops, for example, on Chamber Street. There was a place, I think it was called Cheese of All Nations, that I loved. And then one day it just disappeared.
And
I can't remember what.
And then now there's a food emporium or a Duane Reade. I think there's a Duane Reade now in my apartment.
A listener says that her computer is her favorite place to shop. Right. What do you think about online shopping?
Well, I think it's great for some things. I think it's. I haven't bought too many clothes on it. I go through eBay phases. My boyfriend who lives with me, thanks to him or not thanks to him, we have a package a day coming that's things like it was only $1 and now we have a gadget that weighs your suitcases. It was only $1 and now we have a gadget that tests how much you have left in the battery. So there is a danger of that, But for some things, it's great.
Well, my problem with online shopping is I like to hold a thing in my hand and look at it for a little while before I decide whether I buy it.
But not
how
shampoo.
Many times
I mean, yeah.
It doesn't matter. I'm not going to buy it.
Right.
Order shampoo online and then wait 3 days for it to show up.
No, I do too. We need a bathroom faucet, and I was looking online, and there were a lot, and I happened to be getting my hair cut and went in the bathroom and saw the faucet that had looked so good, and it looked really cheesy. So there is that problem. I agree with you about most things.
Well, and I don't most things. Oh, that's
well,
good.
I mean, no, appliances.
I've yeah.
I got a Roomba and, you know, a talking clock or something.
We are told that the Takashi Mara sale started on May 3rd, but I don't know how long it's going to last. This is a time a lot of people buy graduation gifts.
Mm-hmm.
I never graduated from anything, but those kinds of gifts always seem to be a disappointment to the person who's receiving them.
Well, unless they're getting something like a car, right? Mm. I just finished writing about graduation gifts. And
that's why I brought it up.
I thought, what a coincidence. The interesting thing about graduation gifts, well, there are a few. One is that 21 is now the new retirement age. So they might be moving back. I mean, I think, if I remember this, 1 out of 8 22 to 29-year-old kids are living with their parents. And they don't have jobs. So you might want to get headphones for yourself for a wall. The other thing that's sort of interesting about, or I guess I should say interesting to me, about graduates is this is when they're realizing that what seemed boring, they now want, like a dustbuster. You know.
I was wondering about, because you said that Shanghai was a great place to shop. Of course, it's expensive to fly to Shanghai. Mm-hmm. Is it worth it ultimately? If how much is airfare to Shanghai? It's got to be in the thousands
anymore.
Of dollars.
I guess it is. Well, presumably you're going to have a good time while you're there, right?
Uh-huh. You'll be eating and doing other
things.
No,
I've often
well.
Thought when I sort of look at myself and think, Shanghai, 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 everything I'm wearing is Shanghai and it costs $10, I could go back. You know, go for the day and really clean up. I mean, if you got...
Could you ship it back?
You could get a big... Yeah, I guess you could ship it back slowly and for not much money. I did a couple columns ago, did glasses, and I was astounded how much glasses cost. I don't know. I don't know if it might pay you.
Uh-huh. Well, then again, as
the pearls,
you point out, you also...
Pearls.
You point out you do get to see Shanghai
yeah.
as well. Is there any other place nearby that I might want to go to?
Well, you could take a plane to Beijing. That's kind of nice.
Hong Kong. Okay.
Hong Kong, yeah.
I think you're talking me into it.
There's a World's Fair in there now. It's the most insane. Have you ever been to Shanghai?
I have not been, no.
It's insane. It is a city on speed. It has the fastest inner city train. It has the longest laundry chute in the world.
Laundry chute?
Yeah, in one of the hotels they have like a 80-story or 57-story laundry chute. It has the fastest drivers, probably the fewest amount of seat belts. It was the only time I've ever been traveling and thought I'm going to die in a taxi cab. And things are getting... You blink and a whole block is transformed from these townhouses called Chikamen into big hotels. But it's fascinating, the speed. And the skyline is just all wacky. It's the tops of the buildings look like snakes that ate mice and hoopas and Eiffel Towers.
Do you have another place you're about to do a little shopping tour to?
No, I don't. I'd like to go.
No place picked out yet?
I want to go.
Well, maybe listeners will make some suggestions, but we've run out
you
of
have,
time.
Okay. I was going to have you suggest something.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, my problem is, as you said earlier, I always know about it after everybody else knows about it. Patricia Marks is on and off the Avenue column, is a regular feature at the New Yorker magazine, and it's been a pleasure talking with
you
today.
Thank you. Really been fun.